this paper is co-authored with Patrick Palmieri, my professor at AT Still University, for which this paper formed part of my coursework. My conflicts, as noted above, Dr. Palmieri also does have some investments in mutual funds that may invest in healthcare enterprises. The purpose today is for you to leave with an understanding of the benefits of herd immunity to the human papillomavirus, identify barriers to increasing HPV vaccination rates in low and middle income countries, and to be aware of available resources and what should be thought of when formulating HPV vaccination programs. So, as you're probably aware, HPV is etiologic of about 5% of cancers worldwide. There are school-based HPV vaccination programs that have achieved about 80% three-dose vaccination success rates, but there are also in low and middle-income country school-based vaccination rates achieving even higher 85% three-dose vaccination rates that meet the World Health Organization criteria for cost-effective vaccination programs. And as we have already got a hint of today, the incidence of cervical cancer in North America may be very low at about 6 per 100,000 women, but in Haiti, it can actually be as high as 87 per 100,000 women. As we will see in this table, there is a wide range in morbidity and mortality from cervical cancer, and with the worldwide incidence and mortality distribution maps, again, we see a predominance in Central and South America, Sub-Saharan Africa, and Asia. So HPV is etiologic in more than just cervical cancer. There is a whole range of cancers. There's a whole range of non-cancerous diseases, including recurrent respiratory papillomatosis and external genital warts. We come to external genital warts in part because of greater understanding of herd immunity. So by 2009, 65% of Australian girls aged 12 to 26 had received three doses of HPV vaccination. The incidence of female external genital warts dropped to less than 2%, and the incidence of male external genital warts dropped to less than 3% at a time at which the HPV vaccines were not being used in the male population. So, what are the school-based HPV programs in the Americas? As we've talked about Australia, Brazil approved HPV 4, the quadrivalent vaccine, in 2006 without inclusion of a public immunization program. Brazil then had to go backwards and introduce demonstration school-based HPV 4 programs. One of these, in Baratus, achieved an 85% female three-dose vaccination rate. We contrast this with the United States, which still, almost a decade after the introduction of the HPV vaccine, has about a 33% three-dose female HPV vaccination rate. So school-based vaccination can achieve a higher vaccination rate than clinic-based, which we have in the United States. To do this, school-based vaccination needs backup vaccination days. What are the barriers for HPV vaccination? Acceptability of HPV vaccination varies within populations. Acceptable vaccination cost also varies, dependent upon personal and national income, typically referred to in terms of gross domestic product. It is important to note that globally there are resources available to provide HPV vaccination, not only to low and middle income countries, but what may also be forgotten is the fact that within resource-rich nations such as the United States, there are resource-poor communities, and there are resources available for these communities. What is important in low- and middle-income countries is the introductory approach to HPV vaccination. It can predetermine, it may even predict, whether or not adequate vaccination rates will be attained. So, lack of government support, another barrier, because the existence of public health laws and local government laws enabling governmental vaccination supports vaccination, promotes positive family attitudes for any vaccine, whether this is in Hong Kong, Japan, or Uganda. The story is still the same. It was promoted by the government, and people bought into it. There are additional cultural and religious barriers. At least six studies from Europe and the United States have refuted sexual disinhibition or post-HPV vaccination sexual risk compensation. It's interesting to note that in Catholic Latino populations, HPV vaccination has been promoted as a way to avoid stigmatization of their children from having an STI, a sexually transmitted infection. So it's definitely seen as prophylactic. Other barriers include safety, efficacy, and gender. Low safety beliefs for vaccinations is about 60% and is a main reason for refusal. However, the Kaiser Permanente Vaccines Study Center demonstrated safety and efficacy of the HPV vaccine. There are other routes of vaccination that may be investigated, sometime oral or nasal versions. As for instance, we have a nasal flu vaccine, we have oral polio. There's concern that what is received may not be what you think. What I find very interesting is that low-income mothers are statistically significantly more willing to vaccinate their daughters than their sons at almost a 2-to-1 ratio. And I would hope that mothers would be equally willing to vaccinate their sons. And I would hope that mothers would have equal resources to equally vaccinate all their children. Healthcare workers, of which I am one, can also be a barrier because we may not discuss the HPV vaccine. Therefore, it has been recommended that HPV vaccination rates be included in population health benchmarking guidelines as well as private health insurance guidelines, just as influenza and pneumococcal vaccines are included in those benchmarks and guidelines in the United States. So what is the benefit? We just have to look at smallpox eradicated by vaccination. We can look at polio almost eradicated. So high HPV vaccination rates facilitate a reduction of a wide range of cancers and also non-cancerous diseases. High HPV vaccination rates could reduce about 250,000 female deaths annually, could save about 8 million female years of lives lost, 8 million mothers, 8 million sisters, daughters, mothers-in-laws, aunts, caregivers. And as we've seen from the previous incident tables and maps, the low and middle income countries, Latin American and Caribbean countries, are the major beneficiaries of high HPV vaccination rates. Therefore, herd immunity, the protection of unimmunized persons from infection by the larger group of immunized persons, preventing outbreaks, benefits and affects everyone, men and women. Herd immunity, within 2 years of starting HPV vaccination in Australia, explains a 28% reduction in the incidence of external genital warts in unimmunized Australian men who had female partners, who had immunized female partners. So, to recap, we had successes of school-based HPV vaccination programs in low and middle-income countries. Barreto, Brazil, 2010, 85% female three-dose vaccination rate. The Program for Appropriate Technology in Health, PATH, in Peru, Uganda, Vietnam, achieved over 80% vaccination rates. The Gardasil Access Program, funding non-governmental organizations in Bolivia, achieved over 95% three-dose vaccination rates in two programs. These programs met the World Health Organization's goal. They were affordable, cost-effective preventing diseases affecting public health, vaccines administered prior to coitarchy, prior to the age of first sex. How do we know they're cost-effective? We ran the numbers. And so in Peru, if you took a $73 cost for three vaccines per person, that would be about $1,300 per year of life saved. It is less than the GDP of about $2,800. Similarly, in Haiti, it would still be less than the per capita GDP of about $1,700. How do we use vaccines in low- and middle-income countries? The Pan-American Health Organization Revolving Fund is available to provide vaccines to these countries. Prior to PAHO, the LAC experienced inadequate vaccine supply. Post-PAHO, the LAC have access to funds to improve the cold chain. We can change the vaccination schedule. So we can vaccinate at 11 to 12 years with other adolescent vaccines. We can vaccinate at school entry, 4 to 6 years, with other childhood vaccines. We can go to a 2-dose instead of a 3-dose program. And we're awaiting trials, but it's currently ongoing in British Columbia and Quebec, Canada. The Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunizations can support vaccination programs in 75 nations. Gavi works with the United Nations Children's Fund, the World Health Organization, and the World Bank. And like PAHO, will also defray the costs of cold chain implementation and upgrades. Gavi has access to HPV4, the quadrivalent HPV vaccine, at $5 per dose. That amounts to $25 per vaccinated person, and the prior cost and effectiveness analysis had an upper limit of $75, so in other words, 3-for-1. PAHO also has vaccine available at $10 to $15 per dose, and it is important to note that programs can apply for funding from multiple sources. So programs can apply for both PAHO and Gavi funding. So programs in Nicaragua would be eligible for both. These were the cost data for the PATH programs in Peru, Uganda, and Vietnam. And I'm going to go on through in the interest of time. So in Bolivia, with the Gardasil Access Program, no cost HPV4, this program has also been available within resource poor areas of the United States to provide HPV4 vaccine. Even with up to 31,000 participants, they were able to achieve a 96% three-dose vaccination rate. They can also combine the GAP program funding with regional and national funding. So therefore, the message is, if you want to have a program, you can build it. You can build it with increased publicity of HPV as a cancer-causing agent, as opposed to focusing solely on the sexually visible aspects of it. That is not saying that it is not sexually transmitted. You can use media campaigns focused at parents, in particular internet and radio, as parents believe media campaigns to be less biased than people like me, the healthcare provider. Then what do you do for the healthcare provider? To increase their credibility, you increase their education. You change administrative guidelines, enabling different vaccination schedules. So, why we want to decrease HPV vaccination rates? Because we do not want a population of women to disappear when they don't have to. So the Pied Piper was supposedly nice, getting rid of rats in a town, supposedly not, hid all the children in a cave. But hopefully we will use the available resources, we will use media, and we will vaccinate both women and men so that we can save those 8 million women's years of life. Thank you. The question is with regard to HPV vaccination in the United States, where two states do have mandated school-based HPV vaccination programs. Have the rates for those two states, which is Virginia and the District of Columbia, not actually a state, been compared to the other states in the United States? And my answer to that question is I do not know, because it is not an area of my immediate interest. I would expect there to be a difference that we have seen worldwide in terms of comparing the Americas and Europe between the nations where you have school-based and the nations where you don't. So in Britain, you have over 80% vaccination, whereas in a lot of continental Europe that doesn't have school-based vaccination, you have almost the same rate as the United States, about one-third. I would expect to see the same thing. And the data for the United States is telling us that we have about a third. So I would expect there would be a difference, but I couldn't tell you for sure. Correct. The quadrivalent HPV vaccine does come with an access program both in the United States for individual patients and also as en masse program support in other nations. I could only find information for Bolivia, and I looked for information on Peru, as the co-author, Dr. Palmieri, is primarily based in Peru, and we have been looking for Peruvian numbers since July. We still haven't got them.
Well, I have a question. I'll try to speak loudly. I find Brazil to be very interesting because I would have expected maybe some of the either religious or traditional opposition things might have had a factor, and it obviously wasn't if they achieved those results. You talked about the catch-up, but how that still wouldn't have explained such a high coverage in Brazil. How did they achieve that?
So I'm going to backtrack to the question of religiosity. And what we have found with the HPV vaccination is that religiosity is restricted to small pockets, areas where a single religious leader very much wants to maintain a status quo against vaccination.
Any vaccination.
And for instance, this happened in Calgary, Canada, where the Catholic schools decided to stop allowing HPV vaccination in schools. And what actually happened was parents then campaigned for the reintroduction of HPV vaccine, because as we just mentioned, they noticed a discrepancy between vaccination rates for their children and vaccination rates for children who went to public schools. So vaccines were reinstated. And we do have the research showing that Latinos will support HPV vaccination to prevent the stigmatization of ever having a sexually transmitted infection. So through a combination of the last two factors, when the government and the non-government organizations promote the school-based vaccination program, it is adhered to because everyone in the school will do what everyone else is doing, and we call this the push to normalcy, which I think I skipped over somewhere in here. It is here. So once it becomes the thing that the peer group is doing, everyone jumps in to do it.
Any more questions? Well, thank you very much. This has been a very interesting presentation. I learned a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we have a few more minutes if there's any general discussion or any additional questions you have for our panel. Very interesting points of view and perspectives on care seeking, some of the data on the problem analysis. The HPV is particularly interesting. Coming back to the post 2015 MDG environment for development, HPV vaccination will be on the agenda as well because of they're recognizing that. But any more questions? Otherwise, we have one in the back. Any more questions? I would like to invite you to the International Health Awards ceremony today. It's in this building. It's R05. There will be food, and a lot of individuals from across the international health section, which is a wide variety of interests, everything from maternal child health to tropical diseases, a lot of reproductive health interests, and Douglas Huber will be getting an award there. He did a lot of promoting family planning and reproductive health through faith-based organizations. A number of people will be receiving award, but he's one in particular I'd like to mention. He worked for many, many years with Management Sciences for Health, and worked one study I'm particularly familiar with of his was male promoting family planning through men in Afghanistan through religious leaders, and very interesting work that he did. So look on your program. I think it's 6 to 8. You don't need a personal invitation, and all are welcome. So hope to see you, and thanks again for coming.